Hello and welcome to Meandering with Myrne, a potpourri of podcasts by me, veterinary ethologist Myrne Milani. Join me as I ponder any and all things animal and human, what we know and what we don't, where we've been, where we are, and where we're headed. Do animals involve themselves in group hates? That's the question that came into my mind when I turned off the news this morning before it had even finished. And the reason I turned off the news is because as we get closer and closer to the November elections here in the United States, the political rhetoric becomes more emotional and less intelligent than usual. You can always tell when a politician is having trouble, because instead of offering solutions to the various problems that his or her constituency is facing, they create an outside enemy and position themselves as that individual who is going to take on and vanquish that enemy. It made me wonder whether these people had stolen this idea from George Orwell's 1984, or whether they were even smart enough to have read it in the first place. I don't know. But in that book, whenever the government realized maybe the people might be starting to think just a little bit too much, they would invent an outside enemy and encourage everyone to hate them. And the more people focused on this made-up outside enemy, the less attention they paid to what the politicians were doing. That's what we're into right now. Instead of campaigning, we're into bouts of mini hate to divert people from the real issues at hand. The issues we don't want to think about because, well, we'd have to think about them. Whereas something like this, we can just react. Because of that, I was thinking, does this occur in animals? Do animals who find themselves in a vulnerable position pick a target and try to focus others' attention on that target and away from their own inadequacy? At first I was thinking it didn't happen, but the more I thought about it, the more I realized that it probably did. If someone vied for a top position, or if someone in a top position felt vulnerable and unable to defend that position, either by virtue of their brains or their brawn, then the idea of picking a less threatening target, responding, reacting to that less threatening target as if it were a terrible threat, could elevate that animal's status. For sure, I know that the most aggressive dogs I see are always the least fit, the least able, whether this be in their relationships with other dogs or their relationships with people. And it's very possible, for example, that some of these dogs might pick a target. Let's say the UPS man. Here, kitty, you want to go out? Or the letter carrier. Or the guy with the beard walking toward the person as they're out walking the dog. And the dog mounts this ferocious, aggressive attack, lunging, snarling, carrying on, knowing that the owner is afraid. Would that win that dog votes? Hey, you know, I bet it would. I bet it would. I bet that person wouldn't think, oh my God, my dog is aggressive toward people, and I not only can't control him, I don't want to control him. No, they think, oh, boy, that guy was really scary. If I hadn't had this dog, I bet that guy would have mugged me. And so it goes. A non-threatening, innocent, indifferent individual suddenly is labeled the enemy. And by virtue of labeling that person as an enemy, and by virtue of the owner accepting this labeling, the dog retains his position. The dog remains in control of the owner and all the owner's belongings. So it appears that George Orwell is alive and well, not only in the American human community, but most likely in the American companion animal community, too.
You've been listening to a podcast by veterinary ethologist Myrna Milani. For more podcasts, commentaries, and books about animal behavior and the human-animal bond, and links to behavior and bond sites, check out my website at www.mmilani.com. For more specific information, feel free to email me at mm@mmilani.com. All rights related to the content of these podcasts are retained by Myrna Milani. The background music, Molly on the Shore by Percy Granger, is used with permission from Katova Arts, www.katova.com.